Welcome back to the Go Perform podcast. I'm Dan, and today I am joined by Luke Anthony, clinical director and co-founder here at Go Perform, making his debut on the podcast. Finally, good to have you, Luke.
Thank you for having me on, Dan.
So Luke is a physio, a sports physio that's had almost 30 years of experience now, working in sport, professional football and rugby and cricket, but also in clinic as well, and particularly here at Go Perform. Over the last 6 years, he's become a bit of a go-to for ACL recovery, really. And we've had lots and lots of people come through the building. How many do you think we have a year, Luke, ACL injuries?
It's difficult to know, but I looked at it the other week, actually, and in the sort of five, six years here, it's in the hundreds that we've had through. Each week, probably got about 15 different ACLs that we're looking after at any one stage. So it's quite a high number.
So with that in mind, I thought it'd be really good to have an episode where we look at ACL injuries, what to expect and what's to come. So really, this is aimed at people that may have just experienced an ACL injury, family members, potentially people supporting those going through an injury like this. It's the kind of injury where often you haven't heard of the anterior cruciate ligament until something happens to you. And then suddenly you kind of want to know as much as you can. So I'm going to follow a timeline of the injury with Luke, and we're going to talk through some common questions that people ask us. And hopefully there'll be some really good stuff come out of it. So to begin with, Luke, what is the ACL? What does it do and how does it get injured?
Yeah, so the ACL is the ligament, the anterior cruciate ligament. It's the ligament between the two bones, either side of the knee, the femur and the tibia. And it's involved in stability, really. If we think about the knee, it's not just a hinge joint that moves forwards and backwards. It will rotate. So the ligament is really important in the functionality of the knee to allow it to do all the things that it does. So unfortunately, it does get injured. And generally, there's two ways, or broadly speaking, there's three ways actually it will get injured. One is non-contact. So that will be the sort of football player or netball player who's running on their own, no one around them, and they'll pivot and they'll injure their knee that way. The second way is sort of an indirect contact. So you'll be running and someone will glance you, or you'll be landing from a jump and someone will knock into you, and that's an indirect contact which will cause the injury. Or the third way is a contact injury where someone crunches into you. They're broadly speaking the majority of non-contact, but they're broadly the ways that you'll injure it.
And do other structures of the knee sometimes get injured alongside it?
Yeah, generally that's the case. So you can get an isolated ACL injury, but even with an isolated ACL injury, you will get what's called a bone bruise where the two bones knock together. And that will depend, the severity of that will depend on the injury. But again, commonly you'll either get or can get an injury to the meniscus, which is the sort of the tissue which is in between the joints, which is important for stability and weight bearing through the joint. Or another ligament injury, either medial collateral ligament, which is common, or lateral collateral ligament on the outside, or sometimes the posterior cruciate ligament. So you can get an isolated injury. Often it's the case that you'll get another injury associated with it.
Okay. So potentially someone's had a twisting and popping type injury in the knee. It feels a bit different. What should they do? How best to get a diagnosis?
Yeah, I think that's a key thing, because a lot of people, I'll see them and it was a long time ago that they injured their knee, they'll have that injury mechanism we talked about. But if you get a twist and a pop in the knee and you have immediate pain and it swells, and then you get tested, and we test it here, we're doing a series of ligament tests, and it has instability on testing, there is a very high likelihood that you have an ACL injury, even without an MRI scan. But unfortunately, a lot of people will go to an A&E and they'll get an X-ray, which is not super helpful, and the knee will recover to a certain extent, they'll go back to their sport, and then they'll have another incident where the knee will give way or buckle underneath them, and they'll go through that process a couple of times, and then we'll see them here. And unfortunately, if they have injured it, we'll be able to, the majority of cases, diagnose it here. Often we'll refer on for an MRI or for orthopedic opinion if that's the case. So if you have a weight-bearing twisting injury, it pops and it's immediately painful and it swells, then there's a chance that you've injured your ACL.
Great. And then the next question we get is surgery or not. Do people do well without an ACL?
I think it depends on the individual. So if you've got a 20-year-old football player, it's the first time that he's injured his ACL, it's an isolated ACL rupture, and he wants to have a career in football ahead of him, the likelihood is he's going to need to have that reconstructed. But it varies on the context of the individual, what you want out of it going forward in the future. So, you know, you may not want to play football again. You may just want to get back to recreational sport, skiing, playing tennis, those type of things. And it varies from individual to individual. Partly it will depend on what other ligaments or what other structures in the knee you've injured. And partly it'll depend on your ability to cope. So we sort of have this term we call copers and non-copers. So a coper would be someone who, even without an ACL, they can get a good outcome. Knee settles down, they've got good strength in the rest of the knee, good stability, they're able to develop their muscles really strong, and they can cope without having surgery and do well. That's not everyone. We're not 100% sure what the difference is between a coper and a non-coper, but the demands going forward will also dictate what you'll want out of that. Mm-hmm. So obviously someone going into a pivoting sport is likely to, especially a young person, is likely to want to consider having a reconstruction.
So in terms of surgery, what are the options? How does it work in terms of private NHS, waiting times and even costs?
So it varies. So the private side of it just makes life easier. The surgery is exactly the same. It's exactly the same treatment, no difference private or NHS. But private makes it easier in terms of you can get the MRI scan done, you get the diagnosis sort of confirmed quite quickly, then you can plan the surgery. NHS is the same, but it just is a little bit more bumpy, the transition through those processes. And then in terms of the surgery, so you have to choose a graft to be able to reconstruct, to replace the ACL. The two majority grafts that get used are either from the patella tendon or from the hamstring. So again, that's important. Actually, the choice of that graft will be important for that individual. It will depend on the surgeon you have, what surgery they're comfortable doing. It will depend on the rest of your knee in terms of the stability that you have, whether it's your first injury or whether you've had previous injuries, the condition of the patella tendon. And then also you have to remember, once you've had the surgery, one of the biggest sources of pain post-operatively actually is from the graft site where you have it taken from. So if you have that taken from the patella tendon, you're more likely to have sort of knee pain, anterior knee pain in the future, or the hamstring obviously will cause some pain there. So the graft site is important on that side of it. But broadly speaking, they're the two main graft sites.
Brilliant. So you're going for surgery. What needs to be done before you have surgery?
So I think the first thing is to get the knee to recover from that initial insult. So if you've injured your knee in a game on Saturday, it will be sore, it will be swollen, there'll be blood in the joint, it'll be uncomfortable. So you don't, in the old days, they try and push surgery as soon as possible. Football wants to get that done as soon as possible. But really, you know, we need that knee to settle down before you go into surgery. So the important thing there is to, for a nice quiet knee before you go into surgery. Ideally, then you want a bit of time where you can do some prep work, some sort of prehabilitation work. So get used to doing the sort of strengthening exercise in and around the knee and the hip. A, to get some strength in the leg before you go into surgery, and B, just to get you up to speed in terms of what the exercises are, and it will just make things a little bit easier post-op. So to get the knee quiet and to start on some of the rehabilitation before you go into surgery gives you a good sort of chance after.
And straight after surgery, what's that like?
It varies. I think some people have a lot of, well, it's a fairly big procedure, and some people will have a lot of pain with it. The majority of people have pain of some description. It's in and out on the day. You'll be left the hospital with painkillers. You'll be on crutches. It'll be bandaged up. Most people, if you have an isolated ACL, you won't have any stitches that need to come out. They'll be sort of effectively dissolvable or glued. And then the dressings are on for a couple of weeks. All being well, the scars heal quite well. It'll be swollen and, as I said, sore. So taking painkillers initially, using crutches to weight bear. But your main thing in that first couple of weeks is to really get the knee to be nice and quiet. What you don't want is to be working on a knee that's swollen and angry. You know, it's just to quieten that knee down. And for the majority of people, that means giving it a bit of a rest post-surgery. Okay. So the other thing, Dan, is to get the knee straight. So it's a big problem. If you can't get the knee straight early on, it becomes a problem later on. You can develop scar tissue around the base of the reconstruction, and that can lead to issues and just makes rehab much, much harder. So I, like, you know, and most surgeons will be very keen to make sure in the first couple of weeks that you get the knee straight and you get the knee nice and quiet. the bend comes back bit by bit. Generally, that isn't so much of an issue. But that's really your priority in the first 2 weeks. So I think sometimes people can try and push things sort of a bit too early, but the first couple of weeks it's going to be sore, so you just need to respect that and allow some time for that to recover.
We often have people phone in straight after surgery saying, how soon can I come in and start the rehab program? How soon can people start doing things, like in that first
Yeah, month? I mean, it's a hard question, because I think we've used to working in a professional football club, where you'll see someone day two post-op, they'll have their surgery, they'll be in at the treatment room the next day or the following day. And you think, well, actually, if you have access to them day one, day two, day three, day four, you know, it's limited what you can do. And you hopefully have, you know, the small amount of things that you can do will add up to help with their progression. But I think for the majority of non-professional athletes, if you stick to what we just sort of said, get the knee quiet, get the scars to heal well, and look to get the knee straight, and just start some really, really simple stuff in the first couple of weeks, that's fine. So I generally don't like to drag people in the first sort of 2 weeks of that side of it. If I see them at 2-3 weeks post-op, it's soon enough that if there is an issue, we can pick it up. And if the knee's stuck and doesn't want to go straight, it's not too late that we can't affect that. We can affect that at that stage. But also it's not too soon that we're sort of pulling a knee around that's trying to sort of get over its surgery.
Great, that's good. So early, mid and late stage rehab. Could you kind of just summarise bullet points in terms of what we're looking to
first few weeks or first couple of weeks, get the knee quiet, get the knee straight. Then you're sort of starting to get movement back into the knee joint. So, and this is that sort of week two to week six, I guess, really, where you're trying to just get bend back into it, and you're getting muscle activation, get that quad going, get the hamstring going, get the glute going, get walking well. I think, you know, a lot of people are really keen to get off crutches early. Take your time, use the crutches and sort of walking as well. Much better to walk well with crutches than to try and sort of limp along bravely without them. But that first sort of 6 weeks is just setting the scene for the next stage, really. You're not going to do any strengthening. You're not going to, you know, strengthen anything in 6 weeks, but you can get things moving and you can get the muscles sort of activated and working in a pattern which resembles, you know, sort of normal walking or normal activity. But it must be in a background of pain-free is probably, you know, an exception, but it must be in a background where you're trying to keep on top of pain and swelling. Because if you're battling pain and swelling, it's not only is it, you know, no fun, it's actually really tricky to get the muscles to do what you want them to do when they're battling against an effusion. And I think then once you get, I mean, it's different for everyone. So depending on what the surgery involves and the individual, you know, you can't put a time frame on it in terms of weeks. But once the pain and everything's settled down, you're getting some movement back, the muscles are working well, walking's going well, your weight bearing well in terms of your squat pattern, then you can start to sort of push the body weight exercises, box squat, step up, bridge work, and do a whole load of glute work to get the glutes strong, because they have a control of the hip, which indirectly controls the knee. And then you sort of progress through those sort of stages. And then once you get, it depends on the individual, but sort of 8, 10, 12 weeks, then you can start to do more of a strengthening type program, put some weight through it, do some more resistance training, do the reps and sets that resemble a little bit more like strength training. Again, on the background of a nice quiet knee, ideally. And then you go through that stage, and by sort of 12, 16 weeks, hopefully knee's feeling pretty good, get some nice strength back into it. I'm not always in a hurry for people to run early, but at that sort of stage, people are certainly or are often ready to go on the autogy. So our anti-gravity treadmill, which is a really nice interim to allow you to get back to running sort of quicker and more safely. Ideal situation, you'll do sort of 3 to 4 weeks on the anti-gravity treadmill, which will take you up to full weight bearing, which people will then be running at that sort of 5-6 month mark roughly. And then again, depending on the individual, it's then a case of developing that running speed, change of direction, jump, land, stop, accelerate, decelerate, all those sort of things that you need to be able to do to replicate your sort of return to sport, become more sport specific with the football players, try and get the football out as early as possible when it's safe to do so. And that last part, by 6 months, people are pretty good. If you get a good, you know, they're generally pretty good at that stage. And you sort of think, well, they're only 6 months into a 12-month rehabilitation, but the last 6 months, if you can get into that position at 6 months where the knee feels good, then you've got, you know, another good block of time to be able to really get them up to speed for that return to sport, and hopefully then minimize their risk of re-injury.
So it feels like pacing of rehab is really important in terms of the person you're working with giving you the right exercise at the right times, where the knee doesn't get angry and inflamed.
Yeah. So and I think that's important, and people will talk about timelines in terms of, oh, I want to, you know, be back at football at back running at 6 months or return to play at 12 months or return to training at 9 months. It really does vary from person to person. So it depends on, as I said, what injury you sustained, what surgery you needed to have done, what sport you're going back to. People are different. The same injury on two different people will have a sort of different effect on that side of it. So your milestones, rather than being time-based, you will take obviously time into consideration, will be, you know, where they're at in that continuum of painful post-op, swollen knee, stiff, doesn't move, no muscle, through to what they need it to be to return to sport.
Awesome. We often get people ask, you know, why am I not further along? Why is this person that had surgery on the same day running and I'm not?
I think it's hard. I think that's the frustration, that you see someone, I'm 6 months, that person's running, I see them doing that stuff in the gym, I'm 6 months and, you know, I'm still got pain with this or swelling with this or whatever, and it does vary. But I get that, and also an individual, you've got nothing to compare it to. You know, if you've had an ACL, you know N equals one. You don't have nothing. You might have a friend or someone else who's done it, but that's the beauty. If you go into a clinic where you have seen literally hundreds of those ones, you can sort of benchmark it between them. So, but everyone, you know, I think it's important to emphasise everyone does go at different paces. And And that's not to say that, you know, some people can pick up complications along the way. And I think it's important to be aware of that as you go along it. So if someone has got a load of scar tissue around their reconstruction site, it will hamper their extension. If someone's had a big bone bruise at the time of their injury, they're probably going to have more pain and swelling and inflammation in their rehab. So again, it's all those contextual factors you need to be really aware of and pick up. But actually, you know, when is this an issue? When is this we're going too quick? When is this needs extra work in this area? Or when is there a problem that you need to go back to the surgeon? It's very case dependent on that side of it.
And I think for us, having that experience, and particularly your experience of so many ACLs over the years, I think that's invaluable for us here in terms of those in our rehab program and managing some of those complications as they come up. So there's some of the common complications. How about common mistakes that people make or you see people make? And think now about maybe less experienced practitioners, for example, like people maybe just come out of uni, not done loads and loads of ACL stuff. What kind of things that might, if they were listening, what kind of mistakes?
I think might you see? There is a, you know, ACL rehab has changed a lot since when I first qualified. You'd be in hospital for a few days and use braces and crutches. And then it went to the accelerated rehab program. And I think, you know, people, there's this sort of notion that I've got to get onto it. As soon as I've had my surgery, I've got to get on my rehab straight away and get going with it. And I think, you know, you can do too much too soon. That, as I said earlier, that push to get off crutches, that push to really be aggressive with range of movement of the knee, that push to try and get a lot of weight-bearing exercises done. You know, if you push too hard with that, I think that's a mistake, because that then can cause the knee to be painful and, you know, it's a battle then. You know, you're 2-3 weeks post-op, the knee's really swollen, it's really angry. So I think be respectful of the surgery, be respectful of the knee, try and allow things to settle down. That's an important one early on. And I think the other thing is just in terms of timings, I think not to be too time-based in terms of your decision-making. So it's not a case of, well, you know, 5 months, you should be able to hop or you should be able to run. Well, it depends on the knee. Someone can hop at 3 months and they're grand. Someone at 6 months might not be able to. You don't treat those two people the same. So I think it's being very sort of, you know, more criteria driven than time driven on those ones there. And being slow, you know, going back to it, I think being slow, even in the first sort of 6-12 weeks. And when I mean being slow, I don't mean having a stiff knee that doesn't move. I mean not feeling that I can have this perfect quad at three, you know, perfect quad contraction at 3 weeks, or, you know, my hamstring is looking brilliant at 6 weeks, or I've got, you know, full range of movement at 4 weeks. It's not so much, you know, that side of it. It's more just making sure, as I said, the knee's comfortable, it's doing the things that it should be at those sort of times, and being able to move it forward from there. And you know, rehabilitation, recovery is not a straight line. You know, anyone who's been through any injury will know that. So you'll have your sort of plateaus, you'll have your sort of dips. Occasionally you'll overcook it and you just have to dial it back a little bit. Then you'll have your periods where it feels like it's made good progress within 2-3-4 weeks as well. So I think it's just trying to keep it on an even keel and as flat as possible, but accept that it isn't a straight line.
Brilliant. Can we talk about re-injury now? So obviously there's a big, lots of patients are really concerned about re-injury. Can you touch on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why the ACL is different to any other injury, because if you break your leg, if you have a tib fib fracture, you have a surgery and metalwork in that, it has its own rehabilitation challenges for sure, and it will be 9-12 months before you're, you know, necessarily back playing sport. But generally speaking, you won't refracture. Once you've done it, it is what it is. It will recover and it won't re-injure. The ACL has a high high possibility of re-injuring. So depending on the research you read, 1 in 3, 1 in 4 people will have another ACL injury once you've either on that leg or the opposite leg once you've been back from it. So really, you know, your job in rehab is not just to get the person back to sport. That's half the equation. The other half is to make sure that the thing doesn't happen again, which is really important for people to know, because if you've had it once, you know, it's a hard thing to go through once. So the thought for most people of having to do that again, you know, is really, you know, a big thing. So I think that's, use it as a motivating factor for someone when with their rehab, just to make sure and say, you know, there is a risk of re-injury. Mm. Everything that you do in terms of your rehab will help to mitigate that risk, and that should be a motivating factor. And I think if you think about how you injure a knee, you know, playing football, for example, that twist, that landing, that pivot, whatever it may be, at some stage, if you go back to playing football, your knee will have to do that again. It's a common sort of thing. So you have to make sure you're prepared for that moment. And an ACL injury is in a heartbeat, you know, less than, you know, a few hundredths of a second is when it takes to injure it. So you have to prepare yourself for that moment. And that's what I do with all the injury work that we do, is you are preparing yourself for that moment or those moments when you'll be in that position, and it needs to be an automatic reaction that you can sort of jump, land, take contact, pivot, twist, you know, all those sort of things, and come through that and be confident that, yeah, I can do that again.
That's really good. Thank you. I was wondering about the psychology of injury, particularly with like young people, and for many of them, it's the first major injury they've had. Everything stops. It could be up to a year, you know, where you can't do sport, or more than a year, actually. What do you notice amongst the people you work with, particularly maybe straight after injury initially? Like, how are they?
Yeah, I think it's like anything. As soon as you've injured it, it's like, what have I done? You find out that it's an ACL, then you realise it's going to be a year. Or, you know, if you're out for playing sport for a young player, then, yeah, I mean, that's going to be tough for any individual. I think, you know, initially you can allow yourself, you know, or someone to feel, you know, upset about that. But bit by bit, you know, most people will get, you know, an understanding of that. And I think people are pretty good with information these days, take information on board well, have a good understanding of what that injury then is. And there's lots of resources where you can find out, you know, what rehab looks like. And then I think it's just not to be, it's to break it down. So, you know, if you're 3 weeks post-op and, you know, you're still just getting off crutches and the knee's a bit swollen, it's a bit sore, and the thought of playing football is like 100 years away, then, you know, you just have to break it down. I think, well, what do I need to do? I need to work on my gait, get back walking, get rid of the crutches. I need to get the legs stronger, and just your little milestones as you go through each one. And I think, you know, people like to run. So it's a nice moment when someone runs on your 2G. It's a lovely little milestone at wherever that, at 3 or 4 months. Mm. And you can use, you know, that as motivation to say, well, look, actually, this is where we're at the moment. Our plan over the next month is to work on X, and then we want to be able to do this. And so you just sort of break it down and work through those little milestones and those little wins and get back to running, and then get back to hitting a ball or kicking a ball or throwing a ball or whatever that movement is. And then you build it up bit by bit on that side. But I think you just need to have that end in mind to it. And, you know, with the sport that we're dealing with, whichever athlete that is, whatever their sport is, if you've got the end in mind, you know, can we look to treat them as a footballer or a netball player or a hockey player early on, rather than think, you know, they're just an ACL injured person and then we'll worry about the rehab, but they're, you know, the end stage at the end on that side of it. So, and the other thing I think, which I think patients here are good at, is that you realise it's an opportunity. So if you've played football all your life, 16, 17, 18, 19, you've been training, you know, 2 or 3 training sessions a week, 1 or 2 matches a week. You never really get any time to do a proper S&C programme, because you're always having to fit it around an off-season or in-season. Same with an established player as well. So what you'd get for an ACL rehab is you get effectively a sort of 6 to 9 months of S&C, where no one's going to bother you. You haven't got a coach making you train or play or this or that, and you can do it on your own terms. But you've got an opportunity to get in a better place physically, stronger, fitter, better at your sport than you've ever been before. So I think once you can get over that initial disappointment and get the rehab on track, then it's a brilliant opportunity actually for someone, even if you're not a professional sports person, but to get your, you know, self better and stronger than you've ever been before. So but yeah, so I think that there is that opportunity, that's a sort of a positive, if you like, to come out of it.
Absolutely, it's good. So I guess we should talk about what we do here at Go Perform. How do we support, what different ways do we support people with ACL injuries?
I mean, I think the first in diagnostics. So unfortunately, sometimes we are the first people to see that person and give them that indication of a diagnostics and put them in on that pathway. So, you know, if they need imaging, if they need to then see an orthopedic consultant and put, whether it be NHS or privately, I think that's the sort of starting point. Then obviously we're able to start someone on a rehabilitation program prior to surgery, just to sort of prep them as best as possible. And then, so I will work with people one-to-one once they've had surgery, in that structured way that we've talked about, really. So whatever they need at the beginning to get the knee in the best position to sort of start the rehabilitation. And then we provide that structured support. And we can be involved, really, I say to patients, as much or as little as they need. So, you know, I have patients based around the country, so it's not feasible for them to come, you know, on a regular basis. So we're able to sort of support them by offering them structure away from here. Other people, we'll have a, you know, professional athlete in who will do 2-3 week block with us, and we're doing 4 or 5 hours a day with that person. So it really varies from what the person, really what they, where they're at, what they need, you know, going forward. So some of it will be one-to-one work. Once they're a bit further down the line, I quite enjoy some of the group work that we do. So we have the rehab sessions for groups, all different sports, all different athletes come together. And we're trying to offer them the things that are not easy for them to do outside of here. So using some of the specialist equipment we might have. So it may be the anti-gravity treadmill, it may be blood flow restriction training, it may be flywheel eccentric training, may just be the coaching, the expertise and the program progression. It may then be further down the line some of the outdoor work that we do, so some of the grass-based functional rehab. So that's something that we do here, which is that bridge between feeling that they're good, they can run, jump, twist, land, jump, change direction, all those things, play, you know, kick a ball, have contact. Can we sort of manage that so we do that with them, so that it provides almost like a training ground environment where they then can transition into a modified training with their team or their club back into their sort of full sport. So and then we have people who stay on even once they're back playing, once they're back training. So they may join the rehab group and do their sessions sort of once or twice a month, or just to sort of make sure they stay sharp, really, and make sure they're on top of things from that point of view.
And then I think we have people join the strength and conditioning Elevate program as well.
That's good. I think obviously the guys we have here, Tristan and everyone, they've experienced working with me before in football clubs, where that transition from being sort of, I guess, injured to performance based stuff is a nice transition. So you're right, it's a lot of people then stay on, and the focus then is on more performance and strength and conditioning for sport as opposed to injury or rehabilitation.
Brilliant. So here's a slightly left field question, but so the surgery is obviously really important. Like, we need good surgery to happen. How important is the rehab? Is it like a 50-50, would you say?
I think it is. I mean, I'm biased, obviously, as a physiotherapist on that side of it. So, I mean, I think, you know, it's obviously the surgery is important. Most of these surgeons who do this operation will have done hundreds and hundreds. They'll do, you know, hundreds per year. So they'll be good at what they do with their surgery. Certainly the local surgeons that we work with, you know, we're very lucky. We've got very good surgeons on our doorstep for this operation. But, yeah, I mean, again, I go back to the analogy of, if you've broken your leg and you get a surgeon to fix it with metalwork, then, as you know, it has its challenges, but as long as you do the sort of basic rehab pretty well and work it through, you'll be fine. You'll generally get where you need to be. With an ACL, if you think that you can just have the surgery and just, you know, kick on and do your own thing, then you leave it really to luck going forward. So, and we know the stats aren't always great, so even at a top level, it's not guaranteed you have surgery and you come back to playing football or the sport that you were playing at the same level previously. You have to work to get to that level and then stay at that level. So the rehab is important, both from a point of view making a recovery, making sure that you can achieve the level that you want to be able to achieve, and actually to be able to stay healthy going forward in the future. I guess it's unlike many of the other injuries where actually there is a real demand on the individual, a real commitment on the individual to get back to that place.
Brilliant. I think that is everything, Luke. That's been really helpful. I'm going to put a couple of references in the show description notes. Firstly, the ACL rehab program that we offer here, which is a really good thing, particularly for those that are local and have time and can come in. And it involves coming in for up to 3 appointments a week.
Yeah, I think, I mean, sorry, just to touch on that, Dan, I think what that provides is a good intensity. So if you're at a position where it's like, look, I need to sort of push on here, I feel like, you know, if your rehab has plateaued for wherever it is, then that rehab program, like you say, three one-to-one appointments per week, it covers not just the physio and the rehab side, but some of the S&C side of it, some of the treatment side of it as well. So it's quite a holistic program. quite intense, but it works well. And it's very popular. Most people stay on it until they get back fit again.
And particularly that mid to late stage where they need that kind of stimulus.
Yeah.
So it'd be good. You can look at that if you want to. Also, in terms of injury prevention, some of the local surgeons that we know and in that network have put together Power Up to Play, which is a really good resource for young people and for junior kind of grassroots sports teams. And it's all about doing a really good, thorough warm-up. So there'll be a link to that, and have a look at that and some of the workshops that they're doing. But they're really surgeons trying to reduce ACL injury risk, which is so important for young people, so they don't have to go on this journey. But we hope you found it helpful today. Thanks, Luke, for all you've said.
No, thanks.
And we'll be back in soon with more from the Go Perform podcast.